Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you about Heather Ridge. We're going back to October 1996 to the little town of Waurika, Oklahoma. Gail and her husband, Dwayne, had moved to Waurika with a population of around 2,000 people because it seemed like a place where kids couldn't get in too much trouble because there wasn't too much trouble to get into. So they moved there and started a family. Fast forward to their daughter, now a 16-year-old Heather. She was a cheerleader. She had been voted class favorite for her sophomore class. She was an honor student and nominated for homecoming queen. She sounds pretty popular. Her mom, Gail, said she liked the attention from boys, but wasn't fully aware of what that meant. She said adults in their 40s would perv on her, and Heather didn't seem to mind because she liked the attention. The summer before eighth grade, she had already begun purging to maintain her size 2 figure because she said that the boys liked her body and, if you got it, flaunt it. She was told that she couldn't date until she was 16, and that made her mad because she said that she was already the only virgin in school.
We've touched on how Heather was in school, but outside of school, she hung out with friends, dragging mane, building bonfires, smoking cigarettes, and drinking. But they would also smoke the devil's lettuce and sometimes use meth.
Yeah, so
devil's lettuce.
That's what you call it.
I do.
But
we're talking about marijuana.
In case you don't know. But see, that's the problem with these small towns that people don't understand. Like, they moved here because they're like, oh, there's not enough trouble to get into. Well, kids, when they don't find it easily, they create it. And that's what they were doing, creating their own trouble. Yeah. We know.
Oh, yeah. No, we was young.
We've been there.
We was young once.
A long time ago. One of Heather's friends would later say that she was very troubled. And Gail admitted that she didn't have much time to vet the people that Heather was hanging out with. See, her husband, Dwayne, was an electrician, and while at work, a transformer blew up and burned 65% of his body. So being almost killed, he was needing much more help during his healing process while at home. And Gail became the main financial contributor to the house, so she had to take on more shifts, meaning that moody and withdrawn Heather was having to take on more household responsibilities, as well as help care for her dad. It was stressful on everybody. Heather had started to cut herself on her legs on top of everything else, trying to deal. Now that she was at dating age, she had been seeing 17-year-old Randy Wood. Now, Randy and his mother moved a lot around Oklahoma while he was growing up. In his fifth grade year, in fact, he went to 3 different schools. She was a single mom and was struggling. They were known as one of the poorest families living in town, in a rundown house with broken windows. Randy started smoking weed in third grade, up to like 9 years old. And he would also steal psychotropic drugs from his mom. But around town, he was known to be soft-spoken and well-mannered. He wore Oxford shirts and khakis. He walked a mile to school every day and was captain of the Waurika High School football team. And Gail said that Randy was just a big dumb kid who was a little slow, but he was adored. She felt like this is what drew Heather to him. He was the underdog. And they were together for about 5 months. They went to church together, talked for hours, and he would drive her around in his grandma's Cadillac Fleetwood. One time, while he was taking her to a dental appointment, he even let her drive. Now, that was one time, so she was probably not a great driver. Now, they never had sex, and most people thought that they were just friends. He hated that she was so flirtatious with other guys. And he later said, I knew her, but not like I wanted to. Not like I should have. Gross.
But Randy broke up with Heather only a few weeks into the school year because he heard that she had been out skinny dipping at a party where there were other guys.
Ooh. Less than a week later, a member of their friend group, 20-year-old Dennis Goss, shot himself. And this rocked the small town, and especially the friend group and Heather. She started getting worse with her acting out. And Gail said that during this time, Heather's eyes would look bright and glittery, showing an increase in drug activity and drinking. On September 27th, Heather cheered at a football game, drunk. She got suspended for 3 days for that. Her parents, seeing the spiral, made an appointment for Heather to see a therapist on October 3rd, saying, "We wanted to get her help and figure out why she was hurting herself." They also hung out with Curtis Gamble, who lived with his grandma about 20 miles away from Eureka in Terrell, Oklahoma. His great-grandmother, Kate Rich, was actually murdered in 1982 by Henry Lee Lucas, which my true crime followers will know that name for sure. But Curtis was mean. Everyone knew to steer clear of him, and police even said that he was the most violent person they've ever known, saying, "When you're around him, you literally feel like you're in the presence of evil." He did drop out of high school, but while he was there, he would force other kids to fight each other. In the community, they believed he would kill their livestock for fun, and he was known to hurt dogs. He would get locked up in juvenile detention centers and would always escape. When he was 17, he was committed to a psychiatric hospital for a short time. He got a 5-year suspended sentence in 1996 for feloniously carrying a firearm. Randy and Curtis met while spending a summer working in the watermelon fields. Curtis had his thoughts on Dennis Goss's suicide as well.
He had been angry over it, and his grandma said that he thought that Dennis was murdered. Curtis was determined to find out who did it.
They were also friends with 17-year-old Josh Bagwell. Curtis and Josh both liked guns and outdoor stuff like fishing and camping, just hanging out by the river. Josh had a very different lifestyle. While he also lived with his grandparents, they were rich. At the ripe old age of 17, Josh was already on his 6th vehicle, and everyone said he was a pampered snob. He wasn't ever punished at home, so he didn't like being punished in the outside world either. He got arrested once for a DUI, and they said he resisted and yelled for his lawyer the whole time. Heather and Randy thought he was the bee's knees because he had this lavish lifestyle. Heather was even going to ride in his Dodge Stealth in the homecoming parade. So now that we're familiar with the players in this case, let's get down to business. We were where Randy and Heather broke up, and now Heather had a date with rich boy Josh. Small towns mean small dating pools. On October 2nd, 1996, Gail and Heather got into an argument over a phone bill. See, back then, you were charged extra for calling outside of your designated area, and Heather had managed to rack up a $300 long-distance phone bill. That's about $580 in today money. And the fact that I was the same age as this girl, and I have to tell you the difference in dollar value for money back then, makes me feel about 100 years old right now. But since they were already stretched for cash due to Dwayne's accident at work, this was a big blow to the household. Gail yelled at her that all she ever did was cost her money. So when Heather went to bed that night, she told her dad goodnight and that she loved him, and then ignored Gail altogether. Classic teenage shit. But before midnight, Heather snuck out of her bedroom window and went to meet up with Josh for their date. When Gail came into her room the next morning and saw that Heather was gone, she went to the police to file a missing persons report. Now, I'll give you two guesses on what the police said, and the first one doesn't count.
They wouldn't take the report, and they said that Heather was likely ran away temporarily and would show up soon.
Which is like their classic line for teenagers. They ran away. They'll be back.
And plus was less than 24 hours.
They say that too. So you got to wait 24 hours. No, you do not. Mm-hmm. You do not. That's not a law. It's not a thing. You don't have to do that. Gail didn't like the response either because Heather left everything behind. I mean, if you're going to run away, you're going to take clothes and, you know, anything that you would need. But she had everything there at the house. So Gail started going around town asking if anyone had seen her. She went to the school and they gave her a list of kids who didn't come to school that day. And Randy and Josh were on that list. Gail asked Randy if he had seen her, and he said no, that he had been with Josh all night up until about 6 that morning. Josh, who was absent because he was on a 3-day suspension at the time, said he hadn't seen her for about a week. So Gail and Dwayne hired a private investigator and got use of bloodhounds to search the woodlands, but nothing. On the evening of October 9th, A Texas rancher and his daughter came across something floating in the Belknap Creek, which is said to have been a backwater stream of the Red River. Waurika is in Jefferson County, Oklahoma, which is on the Oklahoma-Texas border. It's actually right next to Love and Carter counties. So if you want more small town stories, we've got some on those right there in Love and Carter counties with Molly Miller and Colt Haynes. When the rancher and his granddaughter, who I believe was about 7 years old, she was actually the one who spotted it because he didn't have his glasses on. He thought that this thing floating in the water was a deceased calf, so it is reported that he shot it twice so that it would sink. The next morning, it was still floating in the creek, so he went to investigate now that he had his glasses on, and he realized this was a human body. The body was a female, but she had been shot in the back of the head, so her face was unrecognizable.
They feared that she had been thrown from the concrete bridge nearby and someone used dirt to cover her blood on the bridge.
Yeah, they were able to move some of the dirt around and find blood underneath it. So they had just tried to cover it up. Now, they were able to identify her by using a gold and diamond ring. This ring had been a gift to Heather for her 16th birthday. And she had been shot 9 times, once in the head, and then 8 times in the back with a shotgun. They didn't even let the family see the body because it was so torn up from all the gunshot blasts. She was buried on October 14th, and while they didn't know who did it, they figured it was someone she knew, so no one was allowed to touch her casket. Gail said it's because whoever did this would never be able to touch her again. Since she was believed to have been thrown over the bridge in Texas, Jefferson County, Oklahoma police were joined by investigators from Montague County, Texas, the FBI, and the Texas Rangers. They said that there was 20 state and federal level investigators who interviewed over 100 people in the days after the body was found. Investigators said there was a party culture up there and kids didn't want to snitch. There was a code of honor and us against the police kind of attitude. They did get a tip that Heather snuck out of the house to go to a party at Josh's house, but Josh, Randy, and Curtis all said that she wasn't there. That the three guys had spent the night drinking whiskey and playing dominoes. But Gail said that Randy was acting sketchy. The night after Heather's body was found, Randy was named homecoming king, and he was drunk. He gave an interview to a newspaper and gave cryptic responses.
Forensic testing came in showing that based on the buckshot and wadding in Heather's body, it was likely from a double-aught Winchester shell from a Mossberg M9 shotgun.
It was found out on October 1st that Josh's mom gave Carolyn down at Beaver Hardware permission to sell Josh and Curtis 4 boxes of that ammunition because Curtis owned a Mossberg M9. They talked to Curtis's grandma, who told them about Old Blackie, which is Curtis's shotgun. On October 24th, all 3 boys were arrested. Now, Josh was found with swords, assault rifles, which one had a bayonet attached to it, and a book on how to make a bomb. He had been reportedly telling friends that there wasn't enough evidence for them to be able to try him. And he exercised his right to remain silent when arrested and refused to take a polygraph. Curtis had told investigators prior to his arrest that the shells that they bought from the hardware store were for hunting. But when arrested, the cops took him out to where he had been hunting and there were no spent shells. And so it was literally like there's no shells? Well, then I probably had something to do with Heather's murder. So strange. After that, he was extremely cooperative and seemed to enjoy the attention. His story was that Josh and Heather got drunk and they had sex for a couple of hours. Then Heather started flirting with both him and Randy. She passed out, and when she woke up for a minute, she was crying and screaming, and then passed out again. Randy and Josh started freaking out about committing rape or attempted rape, so Randy carried her to Josh's truck. They drove into Texas, to the bridge, then Randy shot her and made them help throw her ass over, is what the quote was. With Randy being the only one with a clean record and the other boys' histories, along with Curtis failing a polygraph with his story, the cops didn't believe him.
Then they interviewed Randy. His story had most of the same information as Curtis, but there was some differences.
Right. So they were pretty close together, but Randy said that Curtis actually raped Heather while she was unconscious. But Randy denied having any part in that. He said he even put Heather's clothes back on her. And also that when they went to the bridge, that they put Heather on the ground, and Randy got back into the truck and was holding his face in his hands when he heard the shots. When he looked up, he said Curtis was holding the gun. He would later admit to digitally penetrating Heather while she was unconscious. He was able to pass a polygraph with his story. In exchange for a guilty plea and testifying against Josh, they took away the death penalty for Curtis. Wow. So for Curtis, in exchange for a guilty plea and to testify against Josh, they took away the death penalty option. But then at trial, Curtis overpowered a bailiff, and it took 9 men to restrain him. He was found guilty and got life, but he will be eligible for parole on Halloween of 2026. Now, Josh's family, they got that money. Remember, don't forget, they're rich. And so they were able to get an asshole lawyer that pulled the "you can't rape the willing" bullshit. A newspaper article said that they were trying to make Heather look like the whore of Babylon. Gail, on the stand, was even told, "She was your perfect child, but she wasn't quite perfect, right?" Bringing up the drugs, the smoking, the bulimia. But Randy, who had his own plea deal similar to Curtis's, forfeited his deal so that he could testify against Josh. He knew doing this would incriminate himself and put the death penalty back on the table. But Randy said, "I wanted everyone to know I was telling the truth. I owed that to Heather and her family." He testified that Josh was fully aware of the plan to murder Heather and carried her to the bridge, weighed down her body, and helped toss her in the creek.
Josh's big lawyers said Randy was a drug-abusing, jealous killer who was angry that Heather had sex with his buddies but screamed in her sleep when he touched her.
Yeah, so they're saying he's only saying this because he's mad. So Curtis and Josh are putting all the blame on Randy. And once that happened in Curtis's trial, Randy came forward and was like, "Throw my deal out. I don't even care. Give me the death penalty because I'm going to tell the truth." But then the lawyers, ugh, I hate those lawyers.
It all came down to who had the most money.
Exactly. And remember when I said that Josh had been in a juvenile detention center before? Well, the prosecutors brought in one of the military policemen who had guarded him there. And this man said Josh allegedly claimed his ultimate fantasy was to commit a crime that would shock the nation. His fantasy was to kidnap and rape a beautiful young girl and then blow her head off. When Josh took the stand, they said it was like he was reading a script. He was trying to put all the blame on Randy, like I said, but he messed up saying, "I saw Curtis," or, "I mean, excuse me, I saw Randy lowering the gun." Oops. After 7 hours of deliberation, he was found guilty of capital murder, and that gave him an automatic life sentence. For the conspiracy to commit murder, they recommended a 99-year sentence to run concurrently. And they actually appealed, which is super common. You get so many appeals whenever you get long sentences like that. But their argument was that the capital murder is a level of murder that required a kidnapping component, and he couldn't have kidnapped her because she was unconscious. Meaning they were saying since she couldn't move on her own, she didn't have to be restrained. And restraining someone is an integral component of kidnapping. The appeal was rejected. That's
good. Most,
that's just reading that again.
That's so stupid. You took her across state lines.
Yes.
Whether she was unconscious, whether she was conscious or unconscious, you took her across state line, which is the biggest no-no in committing crimes.
Kidnapping is taking someone somewhere without their permission.
Exactly.
Or without them being of their own volition. I mean, I could go on and on. But to argue, this is why I fuck them lawyers. This is why I hate these lawyers.
This is what happens whenever people have money and everything else. They think their shit don't stink. And then you know what? They finally get caught up in it.
Oh, that just is so disgusting to me.
You got Murdaws. That's another good one. Thought they had it all.
Thought they had it all.
Yep. Thought they couldn't be touched, and guess what?
Touch.
Got fucked.
Get fucked. Okay, so now Josh will be eligible for parole in November of 2036. As for Randy, he went on to reject multiple deals because he refused to say that he killed Heather or had any part in knowing that that's what was going to happen. His testimony was that the three boys were supposed to pick Heather up at the church parking lot across from her house at midnight, but she wasn't there. They tried to knock on her window lightly, but she didn't answer, so they just left. But when they got back to Josh's house, Heather was sitting on the steps of a travel trailer that was in the yard. The four of them hung out in the trailer, drinking and listening to music. And Josh and Heather started making out, so Curtis and Randy left and went to drive around for about an hour. They came back, and Heather was upset that she had had sex with Josh, basically in Randy's face. So she was apologizing to him. And then she passed out. Curtis raped her, and Randy digitally penetrated her. Heather woke up screaming. Curtis was worried he would be tried for rape. They put her in the truck and went towards Texas. They stopped at the bridge where Curtis ordered Josh and Randy to take her out of the truck, likely while he was loading the gun. Randy helped lay her on the ground. Then he got in the truck and put his head in his hands, like he said, and Curtis shot her. So that's Randy's story. He would be found guilty of capital murder too, which, as mentioned, is automatic life sentence. Randy and his mom appeal whenever they can because they don't think he should be charged with capital murder since he wasn't the one who pulled the trigger. He will be eligible for parole in November of 2036, just like Josh.
You know, I mean, even though he's like basically up front.
That we know of, yeah.
That we know of and everything, he still helped.
He partook in the rape. He partook in the disposal of the body. He partook in the murder of the body.
You can't sit there and say that I'm innocent.
Well, he's not. He's not.
But I'm saying that it's like they're like, oh, that was just too harsh. No, it's not. Somebody lost their life because of what y'all did.
Yeah.
Sorry about you.
Culpability.
Yeah. Curtis did try to escape jail. In an interview in 1998, he said, yes, this is nothing because I'm mentally strong and know what I'm saying can't keep me here forever. Stupid-ass comment.
I know. This just goes to show how dumb Curtis is.
Yeah.
He's dumb, but he thinks he's Superman. It just, yeah. Ugh, that kid.
Is he the one with the money?
No, that's Josh.
Oh, Curtis, is Curtis the one that's...
Curtis is the mean one that they said is pure evil.
Which one's the one that's trying to be like, oh, you gave me too much time?
That's Randy. That was her ex-boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
The captain of the football team.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm trying to...
There's so many people in here, I'm sorry.
There's too many damn people.
I'm sorry. Well, you got three murderers, so...
I know. You got all these damn people and everything else, and it's like... And they're all like, oh, well, you know, I've got money, so I shouldn't be guilty. I'm mean, so I should.
Well, whatever. The problem with all these people is they're in a standoff pointing at each other.
Yeah.
Everybody is saying the other person did it. But the problem is that Curtis and Josh got together and blamed it all on Randy. And that's why Randy has thrown everything out the window and just gone with his story because there's nobody on his side. And remember, they were one of the poorest families in the city, in the town. Yeah. So he doesn't really have the same level of representation as Josh.
You know, good for him for coming out and being like, you know, screw these guys. This is what happened.
If it's true.
But that doesn't mean that you get less sentence.
No. Well, that's what he's looking for. No, he's been pushing for a lesser charge, like accessory or something like that, but not full-on capital murder.
Nah, you still help. Sorry.
Texas don't fuck around.
Nope, they don't.
They don't distinguish between.
You guys picked the wrong state line to cross.
And in January of 2002, Curtis and Josh were both in the county jail. Josh was there to possibly testify in Curtis's case, but Curtis was found guilty for conspiracy, given another life sentence, and then was waiting for transfer to prison. So because of these two things, they brought Josh in They had Curtis there for his trial, and then they brought Josh in to testify in the trial, so that put both of them in the same jail at the same time, which is bad. Bad. Because both of them, along with two other inmates, overpowered two jailers and took one of the jailers' cars, a Geo Tracker, and were on the run for 10 days, according to case documents. Apparently, they went to Dennis's house. Remember, Dennis is the friend that committed suicide? So they go to Dennis's house. Curtis knew where the key to the safe was, and they stole a gun out of that safe. They were finally caught in a convenience store in Ardmore, Oklahoma. The two other inmates were arrested outside without incident, but Curtis and Josh held the gas station owner hostage inside for 6 hours before they finally surrendered. And charges would have been kidnapping, conspiracy to commit first-degree robbery, felonious possession of a firearm, unauthorized use of a vehicle, and being a fugitive of justice. But because it is a complicated process of extradition to Oklahoma for trial, they didn't charge them. Yes, you heard me right. The DA did say that since they have not indicted them on any of these charges, should they be paroled in Heather's case, the DA said it would be done if necessary because, quote, no matter what happens next, Curtis is not going to be let out of prison. So why not charge them now and make it to where he can never get out of prison from the jump? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
You don't charge them with breaking out of jail?
That was, you know, that was Oklahoma.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's Oklahoma for you.
Yes.
Which brings me back to you picked the wrong state line to cross. If you would have stayed in Oklahoma, you'd been in and out.
And yeah, they'd be out now.
We have so many damn cases where they didn't get what they should have got. Mm-hmm. But then when you cross state line, you get screwed.
Yeah, because other people give a shit.
Yep, I'm saying.
Who knew?
There you go. Well, in February of 2022, Josh's mom called Curtis's brother, asking him for guns, cell phones, and maps to help Curtis and Josh escape again. Really?
Yes. And I want you to, I know it's hard to follow a timeline, but they had literally just, and I'm sorry, I put 2022 on that on accident. It's actually 2002. So that was literally 1 month after they had broke out of jail and went to Ardmore.
So okay, it's, so it was February 2002,
yes,
not 22.
Right, sorry, my man.
Yeah.
But the point of that is that it was 1 month later. I guess because they said, oh, we're not going to press charges. They were like, sweet, let's keep going.
They're like, fuck it, let's do it again.
Let's do it. We'll do it every week. I don't care.
We'll keep trying until we make it, till we get loose or something happens.
Because nothing's going to happen to them. I also need you to know that, Josh's mom, it's reported that she was both of their lawyers. I know she was Josh's lawyer, but she was reportedly Curtis's lawyer too. I didn't get to look that part up, but either way, it doesn't matter. She represented her son. Gross. One of the people who represented her son.
Wait a minute. Josh is the rich one.
Josh is the rich one. He had the big high-powered lawyers, and then when he went to jail...
His mama was one of them high-powered lawyers?
His mom was involved, and she's still his lawyer. Like, all his appeals and stuff are from her.
So mama was out of the picture, and Josh was living with his grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's like, oh, let me step in and be your lawyer. That way I can get some attention.
Well, another sad part is she was the Lawton city attorney. So she was the attorney for an entire town. And Lawton has a prison in it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, it gets better.
Yeah.
It gets better.
Like they're attention seekers.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. Now, luckily, Curtis's brother, he went to the cops. And they also caught her trying to smuggle blades, and I'm talking hacksaw blades, according to the court documents, into the prison by putting them in Bibles.
Happy birthday.
Yes.
Got the cakes coming in.
Well, because she was their lawyer on paper, she was allowed to have unsupervised visits with them in prison because they can't record that. They can't be in there for that. It's
Well, doesn't confidential. Mean you don't get searched, though.
She got, that's how they found them.
Exactly. It doesn't mean you don't get searched, you freaking idiot.
I guess she thought that if she put them in the Bibles that they would let her just carry it in. Yeah. Right. So yeah. They confiscate the Bibles, but they don't confiscate her.
Stupid.
Hang on. But they watched her. They watched her when she left the jail, and she went to Walmart and bought more blades, wrapped them in a balloon, and put them in her prison wallet. And I say that because they just said it was in a body cavity. They didn't specify what body cavity. This time, she was arrested because she tried to bring them into the prison. She did plead guilty to conspiracy to assist in an escape and conspiracy to commit a felony with a firearm. So I'm wondering where the gun came from. She got 20 years with 12 of it deferred. But they reopened Dennis Goss's suicide case and changed his cause of death to unknown because they said there was a mismatch of the shell casings they found and the wadding that was inside of him. Some people in Warika believe Heather and Dennis's cases are related, and they happened just about a week from each other. Dennis even told his dad before he died that someone was trying to kill him.
So she got weapons charges? Was she trying to smuggle in a derringer?
I'm wondering where that was. Maybe that was in the other wallet.
Well, she just had all kinds of room up there, didn't she? Sorry. My bad. Anyway, so Curtis wrote a threat list that was found by a jailer, and Dennis's family was on the list.
Right. So here you've got this suicide that was a week before Heather died, and now all of a sudden, there's so many ties. Why is Dennis's family on the list that Curtis has? What is Curtis's problem with the Dennis? Well, it's not the Dennis family, but the Goss family. There's something there.
Gotta be something there. I mean, something if they're saying there. That the wadding to the bullets are the same as what happened with...
Mm-mm. What they're saying is that the shell casing on the scene did not match the wadding that was in it. I mean, he wasn't shot with the gun that they thought was the suicide weapon. It was a different one.
Yeah, that's what I was basically saying.
Oh, I thought you were saying that him and Heather were shot with the same gun.
Same bullet.
They didn't say that, so okay, go.
Yeah, didn't you say, like, the wadding didn't match the bullet?
Right, but right. They didn't say that it was tied to Heather.
Yeah, but so what they're saying in this deal right here is that, because if you went back, they found the wadding matched up with the bullets, and now they're saying something about the wadding didn't match up with the bullet at the crimes.
For Dennis,
So maybe they're thinking that this wadding is more of a match to the Heather's.
Maybe. Oh, yes. Okay. So
that's what I'm getting at.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks like they're tied. And I imagine in this small town, there's people who know things, but most people don't come forward. But they're speculating that these are together.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't doubt if they are.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. Not one bit.
Not one bit. Now, Randy is now married. And over the years, he, his mom, and his wife have tried to get his sentencing and charges reduced, as well as to get the state laws overturned that allows minors to be tried as adults, because they don't think that Randy should have been tried as an adult at 17, but you commit adult crime, guess what?
Yeah, you do adult things, you get
adult time.
Yeah, you get adult punishments.
That's right. And Gail tried to sue Carolyn. Remember Carolyn at the hardware store? She sold them the bullets. So Gail tried to sue Carolyn and the store, saying that she negligently delivered and or sold the ammunition to Josh and Curtis, and her negligence was the proximate cause of Heather's death.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't fly because...
That's kind of reaching. I mean, because she didn't know what those boys were going to use it for.
And that's what they said. They said she had no way of knowing that it was going to be used to kill somebody. Plus... ammunition is not an offensive weapon. If she had sold them a gun, that might be different or something to look into. But selling bullets doesn't mean that you're helping someone murder somebody.
Well, besides that, and, you know, in Oklahoma, you know, you got to be a certain age before you can even purchase a gun.
Right, but in this case,
background checks, but they can buy bullets.
Well, they actually had to get permission. Remember?
Yeah, but. But what I'm saying is, too, is like, unless they're sitting there and acting suspicious, because they can, anybody can turn away anybody.
Yeah.
So unless they was acting suspicious, then there was, then there showed no reason not to sell them the bullets.
And plus, like I said, they got permission from his grandma to buy the bullets.
Yeah.
She gave Carolyn permission to sell them to him.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, now you've got, like you said, you got kids who aren't acting suspicious. There's a lot of hunting that happens around here, a lot of hunting, fishing, all that. So it's not out of the realm for two 17-year-old kids to want to buy some shotgun shells.
No.
Not around here. It might sound weird coming out of my mouth, but around here, there's a lot of hunting. We do, this is what we do.
Oh, yeah.
But either way, that case was dismissed because they obviously felt the same way. They said there's no way. And sadly, Gail and Dwayne have both passed away. But at least they got a little closure on Heather's murder.
Yep.
And that's it. That's where we're at, waiting on paroles.
All right. Well, hopefully they never see parole. So
hopefully.
Well, that's it for this one. Catch us on the next one.
Bye.